This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Hello, it's Greg Clark here with Justine Toe, and we're talking tonight about the Narnia series, the celebrated series of books written by C.S. Lewis, now being made into films, and the latest one, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, is in cinemas as we speak. Justine, when did you get into Narnia?
I actually got into Narnia as an adult, really. I didn't read them as a child. I had just become converted to Christianity, and a friend introduced me to the Narnia series. So I enjoyed them immensely, and reading them as a new Christian was actually very special for me.
Okay, so you're a child in the faith. I read them as a child when I was 10 or 11 years old, and they really shaped my imagination in lots of different ways. Now, what did you make of this film, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader?
Yeah, I think it's got a lot to recommend it. I thought the character of Reepy Cheep was fantastic, and I think
before we go any further, for those who don't know the series, let's just give a quick rundown on what is Narnia and what is this story.
Yeah, sure. Well, Narnia is a special kind of magical land that is accessible through the wardrobe, if you've seen The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And the film is basically about how these English children in World War II get to periodically visit Narnia and go on adventures. So in this particular story, they are joining the voyage of the Dawn Treader, which is a ship that is led by King Caspian, the King of Narnia, and they have to go on a mission where they defeat a villain.
And find a lot of things on the way and learn a lot of lessons on the way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Learn how to grow up, how to accept themselves, how to love themselves, how to also defeat evil and also conquer their own limitations as well.
Okay, we'll get into some of those issues as we go. But to start with, they've changed the storyline that's in the book quite a bit for this film. What did you think of the changes?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think that the original novel doesn't really have an overall villain to provide, you know, a big climax to the end of the story. It's in the novel, it's more like this voyage that they're just going on. And then with this express purpose, perhaps, of finding Aslan's country. Aslan, of course, is the saviour of Narnia, and it's thought that his country, or heaven, in other words, would exist somewhere outside the known oceans. So that is actually providing the narrative thrust of the book. But you can't really do that in a film, I think, particularly if it's marketed towards children. So they invented an evil mist.
Which does come as a surprise if you know the books. What is this mist that's suddenly the enemy in this storyline? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think these things really change the meaning of the story very much?
Well, I reread Voyage after I watched the film, and I noticed that they were picking up on quite a few of the themes that are implicit in the novel.
One of the things that I was a bit frustrated by in the film is what you might call the conversion of the character Eustace to Christianity, which for me was a very important part of reading the book, that here's this character who is horrible, really. He's a horrible boy. And he goes through a series of experiences. He turns into a dragon. Sorry for the spoiler alerts for people who haven't seen this, but you know what you're in for. And he has this experience of coming to understand himself, of knowing himself and knowing the worst of himself, and yet being acceptable to the god figure in the Narnia series, to Aslan. And it's this wonderful experience of conversion, which I felt was a little bit lost because of the changes in the storyline.
Yeah, I think at the same time, though, they would have to, I mean, having Eustace convert back into a human is something that we have to arrive at the end of the film. Like, it's not something, because in the novel it happens early on,
that's right.
Yeah. I did think about the conversion scene that I think I completely agree with you. In the novel, it's very hypnotic. It's a very powerful scene, and it's mostly rendered in his recounting of it after he's been turned back into a human. The scene in the novel where he's desperately trying to rip off these series of skins but just can't really do it himself overall was done very well in the book. And then, of course, Aslan has to intervene and say, no, I will have to tear you. And that's a very powerful statement about our futile efforts to help ourselves.
I love the confidence C.S. Lewis has in a story to tell you these truths, and his sense that if you come to these as a child or as a child in the faith and you experience imaginatively this story of going on a voyage and being changed and facing all of that, then when you hear about the gospel of Jesus Christ, you might go, ah, that's the reality of the story that I've heard. That seems to me the genius of Lewis, that he manages to use the pleasures of the imagination to set you up later in life for an understanding of the truth of the gospel.
Greg, I'm very interested to hear what you think about this, because people will often say, and make this as a criticism of Lewis, that by, you know, feeding children these fairy tales, that then they will go on to accept the biggest myth of all, which is
propaganda,
Christ.
Selling propaganda, yeah.
What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I remember reading the Australian comedian Mikey Robbins saying exactly that. He said he'd read them as a kid and loved them, and then grew up and realised he was being sold this religious stuff, you know, and that's kind of feeling like you've been duped. But the flip side of that is just as valuable, because it helps your imagination to form in a way that the gospel makes sense. So many people today hear the story of Jesus out of the blue without having thought about concepts of sacrifice or needing to shed your skin, mm-hmm. and thinking about all these as spiritual dimensions of what it means to be human. So if there was any kind of forcing people to accept the message like you get in propaganda, I'd be totally against it. But this isn't forcing people, it's inviting people into the story to take it or leave it. So I think C.S. Lewis can get away with it in a way that sometimes other people don't. Let's come to the end of the film, because that's really important, where they're on the edges of the utter east, the kind of representation of heaven. And it's one of the most beautiful parts of the movie, as they swim or row across seas of lilies and flowers and so forth. It is really quite spectacular to see. But what do you make of that being on the edge of heaven idea?
Oh, I absolutely love it. I think it's very powerful. When I was watching the film, it really struck me how in previous times, you know, if there were uncharted waters, they would always be labelled "here be monsters," as if there's this sense that there can be nothing except bad, evil stuff on the edges of what we know. But of course, this particular story is suggesting the reverse, that perhaps it's not necessarily monsters out there that are waiting to eat us or whatever, but it could be heaven itself that's on the edges of what we know, and how exciting to be able to discover that and to be swallowed up by that rather than swallowed up by a giant sea serpent, for
it's
example.
It's a great thought that at the edge of everything is not something to fear, but something to find joy in.
Yeah, I mean, so C.S. Lewis was talking about, I'm not sure how to pronounce this word, senshut, this sense of longing and desire for he doesn't know what, but just something beautiful. And for him, that longing was driven by this sense that, you know, he wanted to find the place where all the beauty came from. And I think this idea of Aslan's country, or heaven, is really suggests that idea of the place where the beauty comes from.
Well, for those who don't know the rest of the story, there's still a few more films to see this play out. Thanks, Justine.
Enjoy it.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.